How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy at Planet Fitness for $15 a month? They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster. That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details.
It's the Crossover Sports Illustrated's NBA show. Breaking down the latest news, rumors, and everything in between. Here's your host, Chris Mannix, Rohan Akhmi, and Chris Herring.
This is the Crossover NBA podcast. I'm Chris Mannix, senior writer with Sports Illustrated, joined by Chris Herring and Rohan Nadkarni. The day after the NBA draft, fellas. And can I just say first, I think it's time for a reimagining of the NBA draft. It is, and I'm look, I'm sure the ratings will tell me I'm wrong, but it's just not a television event anymore. It's so very formulaic. It doesn't help when you have a draft like we just had, which after the first few picks was largely anticlimactic. We didn't have any seismic trades to kind of go off of, and it just didn't have a lot of drama attached to it. But I don't know, man. Like, when I watch the NBA draft, and look, ESPN and ABC both had coverage of it, one of my pet peeves is, like, can we get more guys on set that will tell me why this guy's not going to work out? Can we get more? Like, is it weird to ask for more negativity in this moment? Because, like, it just seems that I'm watching and, like, every player is going to be a contributor, when the reality is, like, 10 to 20% of all first-round draft picks meet or exceed the expectations the team had of drafting them. I mean, go back in history and look at, you know, lotteries over the last 20 years. Yeah. I want more negativity in draft coverage. Make the draft negative again. I only bring this up because when I was at Yahoo, we did at the Vertical, we did a draft, competing draft show. And Tom Crean was on that draft, longtime college basketball coach. And Tom Crean was excellent on that draft because, you know, every few picks, he'd be like, oh, that guy can't play. I remember Tom Crean was talking about Tyler Lydon, you both are familiar with, the Syracuse guard, who went to Denver, I think, at 21. And Tom Crean went out there and said that Tyler Lydon was not going to make it in the NBA. And it created kind of a shitstorm, which, you know, Denver GM at the time, Tim Connelly, had to respond to it. Well, you know what? Tom Crean was right. Tyler Lydon couldn't play. Tyler Lydon wasn't an NBA player. Herring, do you want more negativity in draft coverage, or am I just the negative guy of this
dog
podcast?
You just threw that straight in my lap.
Yeah.
I think there could be more. There could be a little bit more balance. I mean, I think
objectivity. We'll call it more objectivity.
Yeah, and I mean, like, I'll also say this. I think that from this standpoint, and I want to respond to exactly what you said, because I think there's a good point to be made there, but I also think that there's some things that they did well that
there's
appreciate.
A good point,
and I think
buried in there somewhere.
I retweeted something along these lines. Like, I think, first of all, and maybe this is me as, maybe it's me sometimes looking at stuff as a black man too, where I think the drafts in general have gotten really, really heavy on, tell me about the worst hardship you've ever had. And while I think that, like, that's appropriate in some cases, there was a situation last night where I think one of the players was talked about quite a bit. His mom had cancer. His father had passed away. It's appropriate in some cases. I also think sometimes you get the impression whether a player really wants to talk about that because they brought it up because it's been such a part of their story. I don't think it has to be every pick, and I think Monica McNutt did a pretty good job of being prepared to talk about certain things as each of these players in the first round came to sit down with her. I enjoyed that part of it. I think she's wonderful. I think to some extent, you know, you have some people that were up there that are really objective. Andrea Carter, I think, is actually very, very good at her job. I thought she did a really nice job for the first time doing it. JJ Redick is also someone that I think has a good relationship with players because he just came out of the league. He's obviously someone that is very well versed in what he's talking about. But, you know, he's not someone that I don't think he watches college full time. Andrea Carter covers the WNBA. She's still very, very focused and does a lot of the stuff for college women's basketball. So I don't know that either one of them is focused on men's college basketball all the time the way that someone like Jay Billis is. So it's like, I think that's part of it too, is that these are people that even us three, we talk about this privately. Like, we don't cover college basketball. And so the draft is always kind of an interesting time of year for us as well. But I think that's probably part of what it is. I thought that some of the stuff of staying away from some of the rampant, I won't say negativity, but some of like the heartstring stuff that I think, I don't know if it takes away from a beautiful moment, but it's like, it doesn't have to be the focal point. I don't need to have my heart ripped out of my body every time someone gets drafted. And so I appreciated that aspect of it, but I do hear you that at one point, and they did bring in Woj for this, and so at least thank goodness that he was able to do it. When someone slides from potentially being a top 10 pick to being in the 20s somewhere, it's very clear that there's a reason that that's happened, and I think it's okay to say that. It's okay to speculate or wonder what that is or what that was. It didn't just happen for no reason. And so it was a little bit weird to see that slide play out. And, you know, I also thought it was interesting that the player himself wasn't like, didn't seem to be stressing about it. But it's like, can we get some analysis of that? And I think it is okay at a certain point. I really didn't see it happening until the second round about why certain guys had lasted as long as they did and what their shortcomings were. And Jay Billis was good about doing that. But yeah, I think that there could be more of a balance, more of an objectivity. And I think it would require you to bring in different guys. There are certain people that we're very, very used to seeing on the draft that just weren't there or weren't part of it this season for whatever reason. I saw a lot of people saying that they were happy that Kendrick Perkins wasn't doing it, and I'm not going to complain about that necessarily. But there were other people that Fran Fraschilla is someone that has a lot of knowledge on like international guys and people that are on the college side, and I think sometimes we'll give you the skinny on kind of why someone, you know, isn't a top pick necessarily, and just isn't part of it. And so it's like, I'm not sure what you do. Mike Schmitz, I thought, who now is with the Blazers, is someone who was very, very good. I thought it not only getting players to open up about their process, about what they do well, what they don't do as well, and not having it feel like an accusation, but was honest about what he saw. And he obviously now works on the GM, the front office side, and not for ESPN anymore. So it probably will take a while for them to find that right balance, I think.
I love how Herring just gave us such a much more detailed answer than any of it. He ran through their whole draft analyst roster. I'm impressed. All I'll say is that to me, it's a red flag when people are like, I can't wait to watch the draft tonight. I'm like, really? have you heard of any of these guys? You mentioned college basketball. The top picks don't even play college basketball anymore.
Yeah.
Like, what is Overtime Elite? Is it like a TikTok account? I don't even know. I don't need to watch the draft. I think it's so boring. It's like a Lifetime movie level event. As you mentioned, with these insane backstories they try to throw on there. I'm glad it's over. I'll just leave it at that.
Yeah, look, I would like to suggest, because ESPN does multiple different versions of the draft. There's the ABC version, which is more about the athletes themselves. They tell more of their stories on that version. ESPN, presumably more of an analytical draft show. Then I flip on, you know, on Twitter, I see Brian Windhorst doing some other version of the show. how about
Just a haters one.
Exactly. Like, you know, I remember reading that series from that Drew McGarry did for Deadspin. This is why your team sucks. Like, how about this is why your pick sucks. Like, just tell me why this guy's not going to make it. Like, you don't, you can just say like, all right, here are his positive attributes, but this is why he's not going to make it. That just my suggestion. Nickel's worth of free advice for ESPN. Do an entirely negative show. Now, nobody's going to want to do it because they don't want to be the guys that bash, you know, incoming players and are, by extension, bashing the teams that drafted them. But I'd watch that version, guys. I'd watch, because I can't sit through like the 19th pick, you know, being called a potential difference maker for a team. I just can't. I can't do it anymore. I can't.
I think you raise a really interesting point, though, that with the finals and with the Super Bowl and everything else, now we've gotten to a point where there are all these other ways to watch the draft in terms of different analysts that, frankly, focus on different things, whether it is the hardcore analytics, whether it is kind of the fun room and it's kind of comedians almost more than anything else, whether you're going to hear, you know, Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde almost too, in terms of like someone that loves the pick versus someone that is kind of a hater with anybody that you throw out there. It's a big enough event with enough people watching where I think they could divide it that way and have different channels for this stuff. And maybe that would make more sense and give people more options. But it is an interesting event to watch. I will be really honest from what Rohan was saying. Kind of bored after a while because I thought there would be more trades involving players. And I kind of feel like for me, both of you guys raised a really good point. A lot of these guys aren't American college players anymore. And so it's like the limited knowledge that a lot of people are going to have. I mean, this was probably the best the NBA could have asked for in terms of if you had a star that's not an American college player, Wembanyama had gotten as much attention as anybody could really get. But after that, what story was there really to tell? And, I also noticed it too when everybody was still talking about the Brandon Miller, Paul George comment, a day later when he has to be asked about it multiple times. It's like, okay, there's really not much to
no meat on
to talk
bone.
About here. But anyway, and it's just crazy to think about given some of the stuff that came up regarding Brandon Miller. This has been a strange draft season, to say the least, I think on a lot of different levels, but.
All right. Well, I nominate the hater show. Let's go. Let's make it happen. All right. So obviously, we're not going to break down the picks in this draft. I want to talk about some of the trades, though, that we saw in the days before the draft. And I want to get into the future of Damian Lillard a little bit, because now we have some kind of concrete evidence. We've got a path that seems that the Blazers have chosen with that number 3 overall pick. But let's start, guys, with the deal that Boston, Memphis, and Washington made that sent Kristaps Porzingis to Boston, Marcus Smart to Memphis, Tyus Jones, some draft capital to Washington. This was a deal that was put together at the 11th hour in the middle of the week because they were on a deadline with Kristaps Porzingis opting into his contract. This was a deal that originally was going to include the Clippers and was going to mean Malcolm Brogdon would go to the Clippers in that deal. The Clippers ultimately backed out of that because Brogdon's got some health issues, obviously with that forearm injury that cost him some time during the playoffs. But it was interesting to see the Celtics pivot to Marcus Smart and make a deal involving Marcus Smart, who has been a Celtic for 9 seasons, defensive player of the year 2 years ago. It's a cliche to call him kind of the heart and soul of that team.
He dyed his hair green.
He is kind of the emotional center for that team. He has that going for him there. They get Porzingis, add him to the front court rotation. That's a good thing, but they lose Marcus Smart. And I'll tell you, I'm a little concerned about where Malcolm Brogdon's going to be at the start of the season. Like, if this injury was so significant that the Clippers wouldn't touch him. And the Clippers, we know, starve for a playmaker. They're looking for anybody out there that can start a point guard, and their money is no object to them, obviously, with Steve Ballmer running the show. They wouldn't touch Malcolm Brogdon. So when I look at this deal, I don't just think of Porzingis necessarily for Smart. I'm thinking it's Porzingis in, Smart out, maybe Grant Williams out, because we don't know if the Celtics is going to be able to afford him going into next season, and Malcolm Brogdon kind of in no man's land. And the Celtics could be faced with starting the season with a backcourt rotation that includes, you know, Derek White and Sam Hauser as part of it. So I don't know, like, Rohan, do you look at this deal? Is there a winner in this deal in your mind?
Well, I don't know if it's necessarily a winner, but I do like the deal most for the Memphis Grizzlies. I think this is a home run move for the Memphis Grizzlies. It's someone who is a culture fit, but should also elevate their culture at the same time. And I know that as frustrating as Marcus Smart could be for Celtics fans sometimes, there's a reason why he is a fan favorite. And he's now someone with you know, years and years of big game experience that he's bringing to Memphis. He's going to start for Ja Morant while Ja is suspended. And then when Ja comes back, he slots perfectly into the Dillon Brooks role, and he's a better version of Dillon Brooks. He's a better shooter. He's a better offensive player. I think he's equally as effective as a defender. I mean, their backcourt kind of swing rotation of Morant, Bane, and Marcus Smart is really good, and you'd put it up there with any kind of three guys like that in the league. So I love the deal for Memphis. I think it's going to pay dividends for them, both in the regular season and the playoffs. As far as the Celtics version of this goes, man, I've talked about this with a lot of just, you know, writer friends, etc., because it's such a fascinating trade, man. It's so hard to say if this is a net positive for Boston or not, because on paper, Porzingis is a fantastic fit in the front court. He's going to shoot a ton of threes. He fits really nicely in with the offense. He can play drop coverage. You can play him as the sole big with other bigs. You know, Brad Stevens even alluded to that last night. But similar to when they acquired Brogdon last summer, and I was one of the people saying the Celtics had a fantastic summer, the question on Brogdon was, can he stay healthy? Can Porzingis play four playoff rounds, three playoff rounds? We haven't seen him do that to this stage in his career. We haven't really seen him in big games and playoff games. We don't know how he's going to respond to that environment. And it's interesting because while it gave them some optionality in the front court, I wouldn't say it's turned their backcourt into a weakness or anything like that, but let's just look at it in the context of the playoff run we just watched, where we saw James Harden attacking Malcolm Brogdon on switches in the playoffs. We saw Jimmy Butler target Derek White and Malcolm Brogdon on switches in the playoffs. Those guys aren't bad defenders. In fact, they won a lot of those battles, but those are the guys that people pick to attack against Boston. Is Peyton Pritchard going to have to play a little bit in some big moments now? It takes away a little bit of what's made the Celtics great the last few years, which is they had some lineups where they were throwing out five great defenders at once, or they had six great defenders on the roster at a time, and it made it very difficult to attack them. I'm very interested to see the ramifications of the decision to go away from that to an extent. I've gone back and forth on what this trade means for the Celtics several times, and it's one of the rare ones where normally I don't care. I'm willing to make a judgment on a trade. I do trade grades. I love it. I don't care if I'm wrong. I still think the moral arc of the universe bends towards me being right about the Sabonis trade being a bad deal for the Kings, but
arc of the universe. Yeah, get this dude out of here.
I have no idea what's going on with this Porzingis one, man. I'm just gonna have to watch it, but it's a real confounding one for me.
Oh my God.
Herring, my concern, Herring, is beware contract year Porzingis. And that's kind of what he was this year. He stayed on the floor. He put up big numbers. Is he going to be that same guy? Still young enough, 27 years old, and there's still plenty of upside left in him. And I think he's going to a team that he'll fit into probably as a starter. I mean, I would imagine Al Horford, 37 years old next season, his days as a starter might be numbered, and Rob Williams has yet to prove he can get through an entire season without having some kind of significant injury. So he's going to get opportunity in Boston, but I don't know. What do you think of, you know, the new look Celtics? And we should point out right now, like, the Celtics are going to be active the next couple of weeks. Something else, there's another shoe to drop in Boston, whether it's a signing or a trade or something else that fleshes out the roster. But for right now, it's sort of a weird mix of players in that rotation.
I think that's the key, is what else comes next. I would imagine, I mean, Malcolm Brogdon is a stand-up guy. Like, you're not going to hear a complaint about him from a coaching staff or anything like that, as far as, you know, he's one of the most dependable guys in the league as far as just showing up and just, you know, he's always going to say the right things to the media. I imagine he's not thrilled about what just happened. It's embarrassing. It's the sort of thing that makes it awkward to come back into a locker room. It's frankly what the Celtics were dealing with the backlash from with Jaylen Brown earlier this season, and some of the stuff that he was complaining about is the idea of these trade offers that are made that then don't happen, and they're quite publicized when they become public. So there's that aspect of, at this point, maybe it's better for you to find someone else. Also, Malcolm Brogdon was far from the most impactful wing that they had, whether it was off the bench or just in general. Derek White was highly impactful. Marcus Smart was highly impactful with this group. They also had longer that they played with this group and you know, could argue that they gelled more. So Brogdon was the one that made the most sense to go also, that's even aside from the injury stuff, I think. So it's awkward that you go from trying to do that to then trading a guy that I think a lot of people would say was the heart and soul of this team. Someone that was a better defender than Brogdon and knows the culture of the team more. Also someone, maybe the only guy really, who's going to really fundamentally light a fire under your two best players and be willing to do it after you lost the coach or let go of the coach. And we know why. So it's not to say that it just came out of nowhere, but let go of the coach that was willing to do that. So this was so weird to me that we went from, okay, this fell through. Now we're looking at more, maybe even like a straight up deal to unload, you know, to get Porzingis here. And then it turns into to Marcus Smart. Like, it came out of nowhere for so many of us, I feel like.
Came out of nowhere for Marcus Smart.
Yeah. Allegedly, he heard about this 15 or 20 minutes before it actually happened.
No, that's true. I talked to people around him, and he was shell-shocked by this deal.
Yeah, so it was just – it threw me for a loop. I mean, the rotation part of it is strange just because – I don't know. Granted, Porzingis is the most talented player in this deal. We could all agree to that. At the same time, he is an often injury-prone big with all the talent in the world, and you're throwing him into a rotation with a guy that is a 37-year-old center and a center that is very, very talented but injury-prone a lot of the time as well. So it's weird from that standpoint. It's weird from the standpoint of this being a team that, quite frankly, and Joe Mazzulla said this every time he was asked, when he was asked, are you guys just relying too much on the three? And he's like, they just didn't go in for it, period. Mm. Now you go get a center who a lot of times will hover around the three-point line. Now he can do more than that. I've written about how he's been more efficient than he ever has in the post. He's been more comfortable in the post than he ever has. So there's other opportunities there. It doesn't mean he only shoots threes. His three-point attempt numbers were more or less in line with his career stuff. It wasn't that he was just only doing that, but it does at times probably will make you look even more reliant from the three-point line than you otherwise would be. So it's just strange from a lot of different standpoints. But let's see. Maybe they move Brogdon still and they find a taker for him. Maybe they find someone who is just a ball handler, which I think also might help because – the thing that I disliked about this most, even as Marcus Smart's numbers had come down, his three-point shooting last year was not great. I actually don't know that he's that much better of a three-point shooter than someone like Dylan Brooks, the way Rohan said at this point anymore. But what I dislike about this most, I think, for them is just that this is a team that gets wild with the ball in big moments with Tatum and Brown leading the offense. Marcus Smart was really the guy that you could kind of depend on that at least – coming up was more of a traditional point guard. So to let him go, again, of all the guys they have, I understand that you trust Derek White quite a bit, but I don't know that I would have done that. Maybe it's just one of those things where it threw me because we saw a different iteration of this trade for them to get Porzingis. And it might turn out to be exactly what – do you remember the Bucks thing a couple years ago where the Jrue Holiday thing happened and then they tried to get
– Well, it's like the Malcolm Brogdon's become the Eric Bledsoe – of the Malcolm Brogdon, Eric Bledsoe decision.
A little bit that, and I was thinking about, why am I blanking on his name? Bogdanovich, where they were supposed to get Bogdanovich, and then it fell through because something wrong happened, or they overplayed their hand, or they had a deal done before they were legally allowed to have a deal done. It's not the same thing, but it kind of has some of that feeling where it might be the right deal for them, but it just was awkward the way it happened, and you ended up having to do more than what you should have had to get the guy you wanted. And I really wouldn't have wanted to give up Marcus Smart. It could work for them, but I'm with Rohan on this, that I think that the Grizzlies have to be thrilled because Marcus Smart was the perfect guy to go out and get, maybe more perfect than anybody else I could have thought of off the top of my head, and the whole league to replace somebody like a Dylan Brooks, I think.
Mannix, I have a question for you. What do you think Porzingis is going to be on, like a one-year – let's see how it goes.
No,
are they going to extend him?
They're going to extend him. I, if I was a betting man, I don't know if it's the 2 year 77 he's eligible for, but if I was a betting man, they'd find a way to extend him for a couple of years. He's young enough. This window is open right now for the Celtics. I would bet that they extend him for a couple of years. I just think they need to do something else because, again, to circle back, as it stands, it's effectively Kristaps Porzingis for Marcus Smart, and probably Grant Williams. Maybe they can get something back for Grant Williams in a sign and trade. I don't anticipate Grant Williams being back with this group. And look, say what you want about Grant Williams.
I would have
struggled. He struggled in the second half of last season, but Grant Williams in the first half proved he was a reliable three-point shooter. He has been a versatile defender. I mean, I saw a lot of people on Twitter just crapping all over Grant Williams like he's just his throw-in. Like, the Celtics wouldn't have made the finals in 2022 if Grant Williams didn't have the game of his life in Game 7 against Milwaukee. Simple as that. When Jason Tatum played poorly, Grant Williams played exceptionally well. They needed Grant Williams then. He's a young guy. He gets along with players in the locker room. I would not be so quick to make Grant Williams a financial cap casualty without getting something significant back in return.
The Grizzlies could look at him, too, as we're talking about the Grizzlies and moves they could make to replace Dylan Brooks. Like, Grant Williams, he could do a lot worse. He still shot damn near, what was it, almost 40%, even with the struggles last year from three?
Yeah. Grant Williams is almost single-handedly responsible for the Milwaukee Bucks last summer being like, we need to change the way we play defense because of what Grant Williams did to us. So it's interesting because I agree that the Celtics needed more front court depth, right? And part of that was maybe Gallinari's coming back. I just think Grant Williams is the kind of player you keep and you re-sign long term. And the reason I ask about that Porzingis extension is if he signs for, let's say he gets the 2-year $77 million, he's effectively joining the Celtics for 3 years at $113 million. Personally, I'd rather give that money to Grant Williams, younger, more durable. It felt like he was out of the rotation because of Missoula, not anything he did. And
he was out of the rotation, he wouldn't shoot. You know, Joe likes, you know, 75 three-pointers attempted per game, and Grant Williams was hesitant in stretches.
They might have been in the NBA Finals if Grant Williams played in Game 1 of the Eastern Conference Finals.
Grant Williams is the one that, you know, lit the fire under Jimmy Butler.
Yeah.
Was that in Game 2?
That's right.
Okay, so, no. That is a bridge too far for me with Grant Williams. I do think they should bring him back, but if they don't, they've got to get something back for him in return. All right, let's talk about the other deal that went down this week, and that was Chris Paul going from Washington, where I hope he got a jersey from the Wizards, kind of Carmelo-esque with his time with Washington. I mean, come on. It's on your resume now. You traded to Washington. Get yourself a Paul jersey. Remember when Carmelo retired? Chris, you did that story. Had the Hawks put out the end of an era tweet with the Carmelo's jersey.
They did. I was surprised they did that.
That was awesome. That was funny. That was great. I hope the Wizards someday do the same thing with Chris Paul.
They have to.
But Chris Paul goes to Golden State. And look, this was not about the Warriors saying we need Chris Paul to win a championship. This is about the Warriors saying we no longer want Jordan Poole and his salary on our books. It's simple as that. I don't know the answer to the question of would they kept Jordan Poole had there not been the Draymond stuff that happened over the last year. You know, that's certainly out there as a talking point or something or worth questioning. But I think it was clear the Warriors wanted off that contract. They signed Jordan Poole to that contract after he helped them win a championship in 2022. He didn't play as well in 2023. And I think Golden State's looking at these draconian, you know, CBA rules that are really going to punish teams that go over that second apron, looking at Jordan Poole's contract and saying, look, we can get a player of that caliber, or at least near that caliber, in the draft in the years to come. Chris Paul makes $30 million in this upcoming season, but his contract next year is non-guaranteed. So this is just a one-year swap with more flexibility over the next two for Golden State. But now Chris Paul is going to be on the Warriors this year. And I'll tell you, Herring, it's a weird fit to me, like a very weird fit. I mean, Chris Paul is the king of pick and roll. His shooting dipped a little bit this year, and you saw the way teams were defending the Suns when all the players were healthy. They were doubling up on Devin Booker. They were doubling up on Kevin Durant. And they were kind of daring Chris Paul to beat them from the outside. This is a weird team to put Chris Paul on. Not that Chris can't have a ton of success, and Golden State does run some pick and roll offense, but most of what they do is like pass and cut and move to a spot. It's really not Chris's game, or hasn't been his game for much of his career. It's hard for me to envision him kind of reinventing himself at 38 years old to be a Warriors type of player. So what do you think of the fit, Herring, with Paul in Golden State?
I like it for them. I hear what you're saying and agree that the Warriors have relied on pick and roll offense oftentimes less than any team in basketball. They have a offense built around Steph, which is more intuitive from the standpoint of cuts and screening and guard screening, Steph screening.
Perpetual motion, too. Perpetual motion. They are always moving out there.
Absolutely. And it's worked, obviously, you know, to the tune of 4 NBA titles for them. Where I think it makes sense for them is that I bitch and complain every year about, despite how much they win, the fact that they turn the ball over even worse sometimes than the Celtics were that we were talking about with Tatum and Brown. They've lost a title, you know, where Steph is throwing the ball behind his back, you know, in a finals run before. At just bad times where it's like they can't help themselves. And Chris Paul, generally speaking, is not going to do that. I mean, he's historically up there from the standpoint of assist to turnover. He's one of the best decision makers in the league. We understand that his body is his body at this point as far as how old he is, about how much he can run up and down. He's not Lob City Chris Paul anymore. But I think that he's a good enough he's certainly cerebral enough, but I think he's also just a good enough player where you can play a different style when he's coming off the bench, and presumably he will do that. He'll come off the bench. If he's coming off the bench, you can play a different tempo. A lot of your bench stuff was dictated before by Jordan Poole, and so now you're replacing that. You're replacing it with someone that will play at a different tempo. You can play pick and roll off the bench. You can also have Chris Paul play alongside your guys. Like, I think Chris Paul, unlike someone like a Russell Westbrook, who he's been traded for before, Chris Paul will set a screen for somebody if he needs to. Like, it's not like he's not willing to go screen for someone. It's not like he's not willing to move off the ball. He's not a great shooter anymore, but he's still a good enough shooter. He's someone that, in a way that fits the Golden State offense, that's willing to take a mid-range shot if you give it to him, which the Warriors have done that when they had Kevin Durant, and Klay Thompson has done plenty of that. Steph has done plenty of that if you're selling out to make sure he doesn't get off a three. So I think he's good. I do think that it's going to be interesting to see, like, beyond Kevon Looney, what big does he really develop a synergy with from the standpoint of the role game that you're talking about. But I think that he fits here. I think he's a much better defender, even at his age, than Jordan Poole ever will be, maybe. And again, like, I don't think it's that much to say, okay, when we get to our bench units, we're going to play more pick and roll. I think it's fine, and I think that he will fit the team very, very well. It's just a question of, can he stay healthy? And if he doesn't, how much then do you miss someone like Jordan Poole's scoring and offensive production?
Rohan, Chris brought something up about CP coming off the bench. Chris Paul has never, ever come off the bench. Not one game in his professional career has he come off the bench. So he got into the NBA, played 78 games as a starter, been a starter ever since. Do you think he's going to be a bench player? And how's that going to work in with Chris Paul?
So a Chris Paul story that he told me once that I always come back to is, he told me he doesn't like flying because he doesn't get to fly the plane. He says, I don't like situations where I'm not in control. And I view his entire career through that context. He wants to be the guy that flies the plane. But if he's willing to make the adjustment, I think that this is a huge win for his career, and it could pay huge dividends for the Warriors. Again, just think about it through the context of Warriors' last playoff run. That game 6 loss against the Lakers, where Klay Thompson is taking these crazy shots in the last 3 or 4 minutes that the bench is reacting in real time. Why are you taking these shots? Jordan Poole is unplayable because as soon as he gets on the court, he's throwing away the ball. Chris Paul is such a steadying presence. You know, he could play 25 minutes a game in the regular season. They don't have to play super small lineups. He can play alongside Steph for 13 minutes, play alongside Klay for 13 minutes. He doesn't have to close games. Keep him fresh until the playoffs, and then you get really weird, mix and match, depending on matchups, whatever you need. It's been a long time since I've been really shocked by an NBA trade. I mean, this one floored me. I couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
Mike Dunleavy Jr. is just like taking a wrecking ball. He's like, I know everyone here loved Bob Myers, but I have my own thoughts on how we should be operating. He said 2 timelines.
I'm not convinced Bob Myers wouldn't do the same thing this year. Look, I just think that contract – became onerous. Sure. And it became it became a bigger deal with these new NBA rules, which not only try to limit your spending, but when you do spend, you lose all the levers that you can pull to build out your bench outside of just like second round picks. So I think Bob would have done the same thing. I think Mike Dunleavy's mistake was like, it was like 4 days ago when he's like, we believe Jordan Poole will be here for 4 years. And
crazy,
you know, whiplash on that one. I think Chris can become a successful sixth man.
He needs to. I
think he can do what, and they're not the same players, but what Lou Williams did and what Jamal Crawford did, all those guys did at different phases of the second half of their career. I can do that. But Herring, let me ask you this last one on this subject. Uh-huh. Are they better? Like, are the Warriors better today than they were at the end of last season?
I think so. And I mean, it hurts to say it, but I also think it's just the truth about how harmful sometimes Jordan Poole was to their rotation. Certainly he knocked down big shots at times. Certainly he reminded you at times like, oh, this is still Jordan Poole, the guy that was incredible a season before that prompted them to give him the contract. But as we talk about this and we've alluded to it now, and Steve Kerr alluded to it. So it's not even just you or me as analysts, that the Jordan Poole, Draymond Green thing was real, and it hovered over the team for a while, if not the whole season. It certainly bled into the start of the season.
It might still be hovering over them. Like, I don't think they're singing Kumbaya and hanging out at each other's houses on the weekend. Like,
and particularly as Draymond is in a contract situation. He opted out, so he's going to either re-up with them or walk. And so, I mean, that is a very real thing, too, that I think you can't get past. I think we had been getting the impression that the Warriors probably wanted Draymond back. Certainly Bob Myers would have wanted him back. And so now you at least kind of nip that issue, whatever you want to call it, in the bud from that standpoint that you're going to probably keep the core together. But again, Jordan Poole was just not a great fit. The problem with this team last year, oftentimes, most of the time, was the bench, which was a group of young players that light years ahead that the team thought that they could kind of meld the, you know, the dynasty with the new class. It was like trying to have Zach and Kelly and Jesse from Saved by the Bell
group.
Hey, man.
Wow.
Hey, man. I liked Saved by the Bell when I was a kid. I'm sorry.
So did I. I didn't think you were going to go there, though.
Neither did I. I surprise myself sometimes. But you can't have that be both things at the same time. Or at least you saw very clearly you couldn't. So they had to tear down the Wiseman pick, as painful and as awkward as that was. They got essentially nothing back for him. Jordan Poole was something in the same vein. He was a good scorer, but I don't think any team in the league was like gung-ho about picking him up unless it was a rebuilding situation. And quite frankly, even with the Wizards now, okay, he's going to score. And I think, was it J.J. Redick last night on the broadcast said he might lead the league in scoring just because, you know, who else is going to do it?
He's becoming buckets. He is going to be buckets pool next year. He's going
to
be
He's not going to have any incentive to play defense, which is the, you know, like my fear for him is this. If you weren't willing to kind of buy into that and be a better defender or look the part of a better defender on that team when they really needed it, when they couldn't buy a game on the road.
That's going to be a weird team because you got Wes Unseld Jr., who I think is a good coach, but he's also not the choice of the current front office. And whenever you have that dynamic at play, it makes it a little bit awkward during the season.
It could end up looking like Steven Silas' situation a little bit as far as just the talent. Well, although they're going to have talent, it's just going to be really weird and top heavy because let's think about it this way. So they get Jordan Poole. You would just ask me pretty much straight up, does it make the Warriors better? So I'm telling you, I think Chris Paul in that context is more helpful than Jordan Poole. But their guard rotation as of right now is Tyus Jones. They already have Monty Morris, who, you know, was one of the best backups and became a pretty solid starting guard there. And now they have Jordan Poole. It's not a bad guard rotation. I just think it's like, what is the rest of the roster going to look like? We'll see what happens with Kuzma. But from the standpoint that we're all expecting, like, they're going to be a pretty rundown team. But it's just not going to be a team that has balance or – we were talking about objectivity earlier. It's going to be a team that if you're coaching for your job, it's a very, very difficult team to coach because the thing that you're taking into next season is not the thought of, oh, we're going to win so many games, we're aiming for the playoffs. They've torn the team down to a point where obviously they're not trying to even think about doing that.
I just don't understand why the Wizards are taking back 4 years worth of salary when they're...
You got to pay somebody.
You know, but it just is... If you're going to go into the tank, just really go into the tank. You know what I mean? I guess I got protected out of it.
Jordan Poole, now we're calling Jordan Poole the ultimate winner. You know, I mean, right. We just said he's going to be running and gunning out there. I wonder how much playing
I'm not
time,
worried about it.
Yeah, I mean, look, there's also a logjam in Washington. I mean, they have, I don't know if Johnny Davis can play. Yeah. I mean, Johnny Davis was a first-round draft pick a year ago. I really haven't seen him.
He wasn't
him
even
play.
Playing last year. No. I mean,
Free Tyus
those
Jones.
Free you know, Corey Tyus Gifford's Jones. A wing player. Like yeah. That's someone they like. So it'll be an interesting dynamic in Washington. But I think Jordan Poole, if the over-under is like 25 a game, I might take the over on Jordan Poole points per game. Last thing I want to get into is Damian Lillard. And I don't want to talk about the dynamic at play. The dynamic at play is what it is and what it's been for months now. Damian Lillard is going to sit back and wait to see what the Blazers do during the offseason, which effectively began at the draft. He's going to wait to see if they can put together a team that he believes can win and that the Blazers believe can win. And if they can, great. He'll be back next season. If they can't, there'll be a conversation between Lillard and Joe Cronin about what is the best for both sides in the future. There is not going to be a Damian Lillard tweet demanding a trade. There's not going to be a slew of reports that says Lillard demands a trade. He doesn't want to be that guy, and he's not going to have to be that guy with this team because, you know, they can be adult about this and both realize the direction that they're going to go. So I'll just kind of boil it down to this, and Rohan, we'll start with you. Opening night of the 2023-2024 season, what uniform is Damian Lillard wearing?
So I think he's going to be wearing a Blazers uniform. I really do believe that. This has reached like, and I hate to put Damian Lillard in the same category as this person, but it's reached like Dwight Howard levels of how long.
No, it is not. Nothing has reached Dwight Howard level.
Just in terms of how much longer are we going to do this? Like how many more summers are we going to say, is Damian Lillard going to ask out? Like they just keep tiptoeing around it. And it's also like, who are they tiptoeing for? Literally not a single credible human being outside of like maybe a Twitter bot is going to criticize Damian Lillard if he asks for a trade. No one is going to criticize him. Like even if he did send a tweet demanding a trade, like literally did that, everyone would be like, yep, that makes sense. Probably should have happened a year or two ago. So the fact that they just keep dancing around it, like they should have been negotiating starting now, and my fear is they're gonna enter they're gonna say, okay, maybe we'll finally look into it. The asking price is gonna be insanely high, and this just gets dragged on. You know, teams are gonna be signing players, like things are gonna move quickly at the start of free agency, and that could affect this. I just don't see teams holding up their entire summer for a guy who just doesn't really want to seem to leave Portland. We're already hearing he's got a relationship with Scoot Henderson, etc. I'm just like exhausted by it. I don't know why this hasn't happened already. And that just lends me to believe it's not going to happen. Even last night, Joe Cronin, like there's ways to talk about it. I'm not saying that we just saw Mike Dunleavy Jr. straight up lie to our faces. So I'm not expecting Joe Cronin out there and kind of give away their whole strategy, but there's ways to be like, you know, obviously we need to evaluate kind of what we're doing here. Like, no, none of that. It's just they keep being like, we're on the same page. It's like, I'm exhausted by it, and which lends me to believe, like, he's just going to be on the Blazers.
Herring?
I'm still laughing at the way Rohan. He's like, he's straight up lied. He had him on Maury Povich, and he was like, you are not the father. What I will say, I was a little bit surprised, and I made a point of retweeting whoever put it out there, that Joe Cronin said that. Just because, to me, the first thing that it shouted is like, you're going to make, if he chooses to want out of the situation, you're going to make Dame the bad guy now, was the way I read that. Because you're saying, we've made it really clear we want Damian to finish in a Blazers uniform. Okay, you also drafted someone that, as good as everyone is expecting him to be, is a rookie. which nothing about that
screamed, at his position,
we're going to be
at
a
his
contender.
Position.
At the same position, no less. So screams like it's going to be 3-4 years before we're, even if the guy is as good as Dame was. Dame was wonderful as a rookie, but like, you know, everybody basically takes at least 2 to 3 years. Hell, LeBron, you know, as far as getting his team to the playoffs, Carmelo, I guess, made it as a rookie. Donovan Mitchell was able to do that. It's really rare that you get a franchise level guy that could be your lead scorer. We've had two of them that have come onto their team and led their team in scoring and led them to the playoffs as a rookie. It was Donovan Mitchell. It was Carmelo. So I guess Lillard's there. That won't be Scoot this year if they're on the same team. But this is going to be like a couple years before you could even really dream of having a contender probably next to him, unless you go get someone like Zion, which only could have happened, I imagine, through a situation where you would have been at the top of the draft. We didn't even hear that that was a possibility, really. So from that standpoint, when Joe Cronin says we want to see him retire as a Blazer, now you're putting it at Dame's doorstep to kind of be the guy to say that he wants out. I just, at a certain point, and man, my analogy is between Saved by the Bell and now this. At a certain point, like, some of us have been in relationships before where we just don't see it going anywhere. And you can be in the relationship for years. I've been there. And it's painful to let go of something. But is it more painful to do that? Or is it more painful to look up down the road and be like, man, there were some really great moments here. I really loved this person. But am I ultimately, it depends on what's going to bring him the most happiness. If he wants to win a championship, if he wants to at least feel what it's like to compete for that at the highest level for a couple more years, not a couple more years, for a couple years, then he probably needs to go somewhere else. And he's not going to look like a bad guy, to what Rohan said. Like, no one's going to view it that way because he's tried. He's given it longer than he probably should have. I'd love to see him go for it. But if that's not what he wants, that's fine. But I wasn't the biggest fan of the fact that Joe Cronin gave an answer that kind of put the same way you were like, so Chris, do you want to see more negativity in the draft? You put it in my lap on that question. Joe Cronin put it in Damian Lillard's lap yesterday. And I kind of feel like that's not fair when you draft someone at his position. And I'm sure Dame knew it was going to happen if stuff shook out that way. They'd probably talk about what they were going to do if they ended up 3 and Scoot was there. That's fine. But I just kind of feel like, man, if I'm Dame, I didn't love that answer just because, like, oh, great. So now, if and when I do want out, you're going to put it all on me. And that team has not done enough to support Dame, I don't think, as far as the players they've gotten, how long they waited to make certain moves, what have you.
Man, I got to get off this podcast. Dude, you're just making some weird analogies left and right there, Herring.
You know, hey, man.
Relationship analogies.
Hey, man.
Saved by the Bell analogies.
It's the off season, man. I'm leaning more into my life. This is the life of Chris Herring. This is true life, MTV style. I've been watching the reality shows. It is what it is.
You know what Joe Cronin was saying? What Joe Cronin was saying was, like, we want Damian Lillard here was, in a way, he's saying we are top 10 in the NBA in attendance and we want to stay that way. I guess in a way, keeping Lillard is about putting butts in the seats at the Moda Center. You trade Damian Lillard and, you know, there'll be a little bump early on from Scoot and some of the young pieces, and you can sell that vision, but you're going to drop precipitously.
But it's about the future, though. And I mean, like,
look,
the thing is, you could get a haul for the guy to where maybe you end up with more of a situation like Brooklyn has had, where Brooklyn never fully bottoms out because they, you know, they are trading guys and they're getting, even now, they traded and got off of KD and Kyrie Irving, which granted, that's more than just Lillard, but you have Mikal Bridges and you're still, now granted, that they also did it midseason, so maybe it's different than if they'd done it all year, but you have a guy that people can get excited about that is like an all-star level guy. You would probably get somebody like that back, someone of that ilk, and you get draft picks to go with it. And within a year or two, you're hoping to get a situation where maybe you don't have a singular star as great as Dame. You're hoping Scoot is that guy. But maybe you're talking about a team that can consistently make the playoffs and get deep in the playoffs as opposed to whatever this is now with Dame. It's not about one guy. And I get that it's a small market. They're going to kind of blow having one guy out of proportion. It's going to be more important to them because they're not used to having this. But I don't know. Like, I wouldn't have wanted Clyde Drexler to have the career where he just stays in Portland his whole career either and doesn't win anything. Like, just
at least he was competing for a while for something. Yeah.
He was. You know, he was. And you're right. He made it to a finals. But it's just, it wouldn't have made sense to have just kept him there forever and for him to not have a different outcome. And it's interesting that we haven't heard more of that comparison. Like you said, he made a final, so maybe that's why we don't hear it. But that could really be Dame's pivot here, is to go play somewhere, get to a finals, maybe win one. And then he gets to do that, and then maybe he gets to end his career in Portland. We don't know. But, like, I would love to see it. And, if Dame doesn't want that, it's weird to want it for him, but it would be really cool to see it for him. And we could imagine that Portland would have better days ahead of them, ahead of it, if they were to make that move, if he wanted it.
Yeah, I think this is the year that they go their separate ways. I do. I think it might take – you might be into August by the time they have this conversation, but I think they'll have it. And I think whenever they have it, the market for Damian Lillard will be robust. Yeah, teams are going to go out there and do their thing over the next few weeks. They're going to sign guys, but there will be teams that are going to keep some of their powder dry when it comes to trades in order to have players available. Miami will be first on that list with Tyler Hero. I think Brooklyn is the team to watch right now with Lillard, because you heard Lillard on that Showtime podcast mention the Nets, which surprised me a little bit, because if he was going to mention a New York team, I thought he'd mention the Knicks. But he mentioned the Nets, and look, I'm sure Lillard's looking at that roster going, all right, you can deal, not straight up, but Ben Simmons can be the centerpiece of a trade involving me. And if you're Portland, maybe you can take a flyer on Ben Simmons. His contract isn't great, but it's another year shorter, and it's only got 2 years left on it, so it's not like you're making a five-year investment in Ben Simmons, and maybe you can be the team in the low-pressure situation that turns, 26, 27-year-old Ben Simmons around at this point. So Lillard would be looking at a Nets team with Mikal Bridges, who is a number two, and I say that complimentarily, like, he is a legit number two. Like, that's a player. Like, he is a star who could be a borderline number one on some teams. But Lillard, you got Dorian Finney-Smith there. You've got Nick Claxton there. You've got Seth Curry there. You're not a super team by any stretch, but you're a playoff team in the Eastern Conference, and you give yourself a shot with Lillard and a still-developing Mikal Bridges on that roster. So that's, to circle it back, that's my prediction. I think he winds up in Brooklyn. I think he winds up the Nets. The Nets have like 11 draft picks over the next 6 years or something like that they can deal. They got the draft capital. They've got a young player in Ben Simmons who may be more appealing to Portland than Tyler Hero, who's got, I think, the full 5 years left on his contract, or 4 years left on his contract. So I think the Nets are in the pole position if Lillard ultimately gets traded.
He's got to get to Miami, and I'm not just saying that as a homer. But if he wants to win a title, yeah, just get to Miami. Yeah,
and you will. I'm sure you will provide Dwayne Wade's thoughts on Lillard to Miami.
Wow! This podcast has been off the rails.
It's derailed. It's gone.
Should there be more negativity to the draft? Saying my stuff would save by the bell. What are we doing?
Yeah, more your feelings there. Your deep dive into ex-girlfriends was a lot.
As long as she doesn't listen, right?
All right, we will be back early next week. Hopefully we'll have some more activity in the NBA on the dawn of free agency, which is just about a week away.